Thanks, Dad. This is Jimmy DeYoung Jr., folks, and I'm talking to my longtime friend and Israeli guide, Kenny Garon in Israel. Hey, Kenny, how are you doing?
Oh, everything is A-okay, Jimmy. Good to hear from you. Good to hear your voice. Thank you for asking.
Good to talk to you, Kenny. Hey, I've been reading some stories that have been posted online and news around the world that tourism is up. It reached even a peak in the month of July.
Well, Jimmy, what can I say? It's very blessed. We had a record-breaking year in incoming tourism, and as a result, the difficulty to book hotels and flights, more than the usual number of groups had to wait till July to come. That would explain why we've had, in this record-breaking year, a record-breaking month of July.
Kenny, we're so excited about our fall tour. Why is fall such a good time to come?
Coming this fall, in my opinion, that's the nicest time of the year to come. Admittedly, we have a very short fall season, but maybe that's part of the appeal as well. Coming as she always does every year after a long, hot, dry summer, all of a sudden, you feel it first in the air. You smell it in the countryside. You break the heat. The days are shorter. The evenings are cooler. There's a rebirth of farming activity. The fall harvest is all coming in, what the Bible refers to as the early rains. And there's a true sense of change in the air, a true sense of Genesis, renewal, rebirth. It's my favorite season of the year. It's not by chance that the Jewish New Year and the fall holidays all begin at this time. Going back to biblical days when the Jew lived in the land and lived off the land as a farmer, he was very much attuned to the four seasons of the year. And that is why the fall season is the most appropriate time of the year to begin the next year.
I'm talking to our longtime friend, Kenny Garan, who is an Israeli guide in the land of Israel. And our tour dates for the fall are October 9th through the 22nd. Kenny, why is it good for Christians to visit Israel?
It's called touching base with home, where it all began. I've heard so many pastors over the many years claim how they can be teaching sermons in church and giving Bible lessons at home. But until they themselves come into the land of the Bible and bring their congregants with them, only then does the Bible truly come alive for them. I've heard biblical scholars refer to a visit to the land of Israel, the land of the Bible, as a so-called fifth gospel, Jimmy, helping to make the Bible come even that much more alive as the pastors, with their participants, follow in the footsteps of Jesus, recalling New Testament narrative. And as I'm always fond of saying, Jimmy, all of those long, difficult, harsh-sounding proper names in the Bible that some people have been skipping over, you know, the last few decades as they read their Bible. In the course of the week pilgrimage here in the land, your people will be at these sites where Jesus walked, where he preached, where he performed his miracles. It's a life-changing trip. You'll never look at the Bible again in the same eyes. And we've heard it so often, and it doesn't get old because it's the ultimate compliment for the land of Israel when people say it's a life-changing visit.
The sights, the sounds, the smells, everything. It just, in fact, it's almost sensory overload while you're there. You know, just never mind the amount of knowledge and what you're learning as you go from sight, understanding the customs and the cultures of the times and everything that's there. I mean, that's a overload enough, and the information that you're getting, and then put on top of that the smells and the sounds and the calls to prayer from the different religions that are there, and the different people that you will meet, and the different foods and taste and everything. And it really is an overwhelming experience for a lot of people.
It is. It can be overpowering No question about it. You'll take your trip and the memories that you gathered here for a lifetime. How often groups come back and they start Bible classes together, mm-hmm. and of course they encourage their fellow members of the community, their friends, their family, their neighbors, to make that trip to Israel.
Let's talk about a couple of the sites in Israel, Kenny, real quick. Tell me about Caesarea Philippi, the Banyas, up in the north, in the northern part of the Galilee.
You know, Jimmy, one of the questions that we Israeli tour guides often ask, what is your favorite site? And, you know, my response to that is always, it's kind of like asking a mother who her favorite child is.
Yeah.
That is to say, of course she has a favorite child, she's just not going to admit to it. In that spirit, the biblical Caesarea Philippi, the New Testament site Caesarea Philippi, is truly one of my favorite places in Israel, certainly one of my favorite places to bring Christian groups. And for so many reasons. First of all, the natural beauty. Today, the Israeli notes the New Testament Caesarea Philippi, Jimmy, as the Banyas River. The Banyas is one of the three sources of the one and only Jordan River. So you have at one side an abundance of natural beauty, an abundance of water, and thanks to this last winter, a godsend, a blessed amount of rain, and all of the three sources, the headwaters of the Upper Jordan River, the Banyas being once again one of them, is at full strength. It's just a sight to behold, very tranquil, very restful. You also have an abundance of very impressive archaeological and biblical history, and needless to say, for the Christian community, Caesarea Philippi at the time of Jesus was one of the three provinces that were located around the Sea of Galilee and the headquarters for one of Herod the Great's son. I don't want to give out too much information, but Caesarea Philippi is the backdrop in the Gospel of Matthew, where Jesus, wanting to see how much of his teachings have been absorbed by his Galilean fishermen disciples, it's at Caesarea Philippi that Jesus first poses the question in front of them, first, who do the people say I am? And then, of course, the million-dollar question, who do you say I am? This is a very significant site, located up in the geographical, political border between the luscious water regions of the Upper Galilee and the Golan Heights, right underneath the snow-capped peaks of Mount Hermon.
Hey, one of the sites that is so very important to us, in fact, Dad believes that this is the holiest site on the earth, is the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. Give us quickly, just kind of paint the picture for us, what we will be seeing as we walk through the gates going up onto the Temple Mount.
Yes, the Temple Mount, also known in the Muslim world as the Dome of the Rock, the Golden Dome of the Rock, certainly one of the leading landmarks of Jerusalem and has been since it's being built in the 7th century A.D., serving the Muslim world as one of their holy sites. But it, in addition to that and prior to that, this site does not suffer from a lack of first-rank Jewish Christian tradition, which include, in Judaism, the foundation stone. Very briefly, Jimmy, when God began the work of creating the universe, this outcrop of bedrock was his first creation. And now on all four sides of it, he built the entire world. If you will, the ancient Jewish tradition that Jerusalem, she is the center of the universe. Now, you'd think that'd be enough of a tradition, but it goes on. That outcrop of bedrock, that's right, up on the top of the mountain and underneath the Muslims' Golden Dome, that outcrop of bedrock also serves as the peak of a very significant mountain, Mount Moriah. Mount Moriah, I recall for your people, Jimmy, the scene of the binding of Isaac, where Abraham prepared to sacrifice his son Isaac before being prevented by God, Abraham having passed the test. This is the scene, Jimmy, of the covenant pact signed between God and Abraham, where God now promises Abraham to be the leader of a people, the chosen people, mm-hmm. and now promises these people their land, the promised land. We're up to the time of King David. You recall, God did not allow David to build the first temple. His hands were bloodied. He was a warrior. But he did allow him to purchase, cash money down, the former Jebusite threshing floor, which, having done, he now pitches his tent, places the Ark of the Covenant for safekeeping, David now waiting for his son Solomon to come along to build the first temple, Solomon's temple, that outcrop of bedrock. Becomes the altar of Solomon's temple. The Babylonian invasion, the destruction of Solomon's temple, the exile to Babylon, the return to Zion, and the rebuilding of the second temple at the time of Zerubbabel. And that outcrop of bedrock now located behind the double-sealed golden gates of the Holy of Holies. So holy, in fact, only one man, one day of the year, and only under one condition, could go into beyond those double gates into the Holy of Holies. That would have been the high priest on the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. So you can see this is an extremely holy site for the Jewish people. And you can imagine why this would be considered politically the most sensitive spot in the world.
Our favorite, our longtime friend, Israeli guide, Kenny Garon, our trip in Israel, October 9th through the 22nd. We ask you to come along, join with us. If you've never been to Israel, it's a Bible prophecy study tour. We'll look at Israel past, present, and the future. Kenny, thank you so much, and we look forward to being with you in October. And I hope, I would love to touch base with you right before the new year comes, before Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, if that's okay with you.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. For your listeners, I wish them continued happy last days of summer. I'm sure so many of them are getting their children prepared for a reopening of school, as well as and anticipating the beginning of the fall season, Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. I would like to wish all of your listening audience Shana Tova, a happy New Year, Chag Sameach, happy holidays.
Chag Sameach, Kenny.